You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome. Today, we will be talking about design, because why not? The path to good design is never a straight one. It is also hardly, if ever, predictable. But there is one thing that good design rests on: empathy. The foundation of great design thinking has always got to keep the end user in mind, that is you and me. Take the history of Ford design that we will explore later in the podcast, for example, or the latest development in the company that Forbes published with this headline: Why Ford is putting a furniture guy in charge of its new smart mobility unit. What would a furniture guy bring to an automotive giant? What are the benefits of out-of-the-box thinking? How does empathy improve user experience? And what can we learn from Ford's latest move? These are some of the questions we will address on today's edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control, with me, Rakesh Sharma.
The Deep Dive podcast series: Ford has a furniture guy heading its smart mobility team. Why?
Yes, you did hear me right. A furniture executive is now in charge of mobility. Last I heard, chairs don't move. But last I heard, chairs have undergone great innovation. Writer Joanne Muller reported in a March 2019 Forbes piece that Ford Motor is now forming a new subsidiary called Ford Smart Mobility LLC, based in Palo Alto, California, and that one of its directors, former Steelcase chief executive James Hackett, would step down from the board to lead the group. Forbes said, and I quote, "Putting a furniture executive in charge of mobility might seem like an oxymoron, but Hackett is recognized as an innovator in office space who helped change the way people work. During his 30 years at Steelcase, he helped transform the company from a traditional office furniture manufacturer to a designer of cutting-edge workspaces, shifting away from cubicles, for example, to an open space environment, giving employees the flexibility to work where they want." Unquote. The implication being that if a man can revolutionize office ergonomics with delicious free-spiritedness, he sure as hell can tinker with car design. And James Hackett is also the man you need to get hold of if you don't like the open plan space in your office. As for the man of the moment, Hackett, he said, and I quote, "I am absolutely thrilled to lead Ford's mobility business into the future. Transportation in the world today is on the cusp of a major revolution, and Ford plans to lead the way by changing the way the world moves through Ford Smart Mobility." Unquote. What is Ford Smart Mobility? We will find that out in just a bit. But first, let's figure out just who James Hackett is. James Hackett is a member of Ford's board of directors since 2013, and as Forbes tells us, will report directly to Ford president and chief executive Mark Fields, who, as the piece says, is trying to channel Henry Ford to solve society's mobility problems. Quoting from Forbes again, his strategy is to expand Ford's business model so that it can be both an automaker and a mobility services company. Unquote. This is where, says Forbes, the new subsidiary, Ford Smart Mobility, comes in to cement the company's aspirations to be a leader in connectivity, mobility, autonomous vehicles, customer experience, and data and analytics. It is easy now to see why Fields thinks Hackett is a good choice to lead both business development and design. In a statement, Fields said, and I quote, "Ford Smart Mobility and expanding it to mobility services are significant growth opportunities. Our plan is to quickly become part of the growing transportation services market, which already accounts for $5.4 trillion in annual revenue. Jim Hackett is the right visionary leader with extensive experience in business development and design to take us into the mobility services business in the future." Unquote. According to Forbes, the new company will work with existing product development, research and advanced engineering, marketing and data analytics teams, and will also develop new mobility services and invest in promising mobility-related ventures. Ford Smart Mobility will also design and build mobility services on its own and collaborate with startups and tech companies. As Ford's executive chairman Bill Ford put it, the idea is that the new subsidiary will enable the development mobility solutions to address the rapidly changing transportation challenges. He said, and I quote, "Ensuring the freedom of mobility requires us to continually look beyond the needs of today and interpret what mobility will mean to future generations in an increasingly crowded world." Unquote. Ford's preoccupation with design as a purveyor of solutions is not new. Neither is Ford's interest in unusual design picks. Let's examine now the roots of Ford design. The Ford design department was established as far back as in 1935 and was ideated by Henry Ford's son, Edsel Ford, who wanted to wed function with form. The first designer hired by Edsel was E.T. Bob Gregory, who had been a shipbuilder and who brought the styling bridge, a U-shaped structure that rode on a series of parallel rails. This helped with coordinates that could later be used on other car models as well. But cutting-edge design existed from the very start, when in 1908, the Model T changed the automotive industry forever. The first vehicle from Ford design put the spotlight on the design process. The Lincoln Zephyr in 1937, with its horizontal grille, something that remains on Lincoln vehicles even today. Post the World War, the new 1949 Ford offered integrated fenders, chrome trim, and aviation-reminiscent central grille design, all part of the luxuriant experience Ford was hoping to give its customers. The F-Series was path-breaking thanks to its contours, integrated headlights, ability to tow, and emphasis on cargo, since they are the standard today. Ford has been leading new trends from the Thunderbird and Mustang to the Explorer and Focus Electric Plus. The aluminium alloy-bodied 2015 F1 50 was a game changer. Although interesting materials used in Ford vehicles happened even back in 1941 when, get this, with the soybean car, which was a plastic vehicle made of soybeans, flax, and other natural elements. Whoever said organic was a recent trend could do well to look at Ford design all the way back in 1941. While we will continue to explore the new role of James Hackett at Ford, let's also remember just how car design is no longer a sacrosanct space designed for trained design engineers. Remember when ex-Spice Girl turned fashion designer Victoria Beckham, Posh Spice, was invited to design that special edition Evoque VB launched in 2012? In July 2017, though, 5 years later, a big controversy erupted when some media outlets reported how Land Rover's design director Jerry McGovern was angry with Victoria's appropriation of undue credit. McGovern said that she had exaggerated the role she had played in designing the car by saying at its launch, she said this, and I quote, "I've designed a car that I want to drive, a car that I think my husband David wants to drive," unquote. Well, McGovern, who did actually design the Evoque, told reporters that she had spoken out of turn because she hadn't designed the car. To be a car designer takes years, he said. Oops. Land Rover, however, said that the three-year project was completed in full by both parties and was a huge creative success around the world. Oh, well, Posh. If there's a discrepancy somewhere in these two stories, it just goes to show that today, branding is almost as important as what is being branded, and healthy sales figures are what everyone is after at the end of the day. But Ford's decision to use an erstwhile furniture whiz indicates its willingness to trust a designer to deliver not just profit, but solutions in a world clamoring for them. An automobile design that thinks beyond automobiles. Is that the future that we're looking at when it comes to the automotive industry? In a perceptive piece for The Atlantic, Jerry Usim connects the story of the American economy with the types of people who run its corporations. He associates the early days of mass production to mechanically minded men like Henry Ford. After the conglomerate craze of the 60s and 70s, he says almost a third of CEOs hailed from finance and accounting backgrounds. And then a crop of technologists such as Andy Grove and Bill Gates arrived. That is why he says that Ford Motor Company's choice of Hackett is unconventional, because he's a chief executive who hadn't been reared in Detroit, which is the motor capital of the world, and didn't easily fit established CEO molds. He was a furniture maker. Jim Hackett, 63 years of age, is a devotee of product development known as design thinking, which rigorously focuses on how the user experiences a product. He said, and I quote, "He forced Steelcase to think less about cubicles, its bread and butter product when he arrived, and more about the people inside the cubicles. Hiring anthropologists and sociologists and working closely with tech experts, he made Steelcase a pioneer in the team-oriented open workspaces that are so common today. In effect, he transformed an office supply company into a leader of the revolution in the way we work." The writer doesn't think that furniture designers in automobiles is a far-fetched idea, and neither do I, to be honest. He says so because he was at hand in the foam and aluminium cockpit of a self-driving car prototype in one of Ford's Dearborn design studios to witness how Hackett's mind actually works. There was a driver's seat in the prototype that could swivel around like an office chair. As he says for The Atlantic, the choice of Hackett to lead Ford confounded both those analysts who expected a dyed-in-the-wool carmaker and those who expected a high-tech hand to manage the company as cars morph into rolling computers. But his selection suggests a third way, which may, in fact, capture the times we are living in. We don't live in the age of the automobile or even the age of the computer. We live in the age of user experience, unquote. Hackett thinks 90-button TV remotes are maddening, and he may bring his penchant for his simplifying user experience to cars as well, and wouldn't we like that? The writer seems to agree as he goes on to explain, and I quote, "Our lives are made up of human-machine interactions with smartphones, televisions, internet-enabled parking meters that don't accept quarters, that have the power to delight and often infuriate. Into this arena has stepped a new class of professional, the user experience or UX designer, whose job is to see a product not from an engineer's, marketer's, or legal department's perspective, but from the viewpoint of the user and user alone, and to insist that the customer should not have to learn to speak the company's internal language. The company should learn to speak the customer's language." Hackett, in that regard, is a game changer, or rather an experience modifier. He did it once with office furniture, and people believe he can do it again with cars. Right at the beginning of the podcast, I stressed the importance of empathy. Design engineers and design thinkers ought to keep just that one thing in mind. It's not about the engineer, it's not about the legal department, it's not about the designer even. If it is not helping the end user have a better experience while using the product is probably worth not much. The primacy of user experience is what is driving a whole lot of design thinking these days. With high-tech entrants such as Tesla and Google heating up the automobile market, the question is not whether they can learn about crankshafts and drivetrains faster than Ford or General Motors, or whether other car makers can learn software and algorithms. Hackett, according to The Atlantic, is reflective of Ford's bet that the winner won't be the best chassis maker or software maker, but the company that nails the interaction between man and machine. As Bill Ford, the company's executive chairman and great-grandson of Henry Ford, explained, "One of the things that drew me to Jim was his commitment to design thinking, which puts the human being at the center of the equation." The term user experience, or UX, originated in Silicon Valley, and the piece cites Don Norman, a UC San Diego professor and the author of the seminal book, The Design of Everyday Things, to recall how Steve Jobs, in a way, exemplified this idea best when he put the consumer's interaction with an Apple product before what the marketing and engineering guys had to say. After Jobs had left the company, Norman suggested to then-CEO John Sculley in 1993, remember the time when Steve Jobs was not associated with Apple? That time, the CEO was John Sculley. And Norman told Sculley that there is a need for someone who took the overview of what it was like to use these machines. He formed a UX office and styled himself Apple's user experience architect, according to The Atlantic. This affected design ideologies, as we now know, around the world. According to the piece, the migration of UX thinking to other industries was accelerated by the Palo Alto design outfit IDEO, whose founder David Kelly helped design the first Apple mouse. It counted Medtronic and Procter & Gamble among its first clients. In the early 1990s, a 30-something Hackett visited IDEO as Steelcase was thinking of entering a new market. He described his experience there as so profound that 3 years later, Steelcase bought a majority stake in the company, that is IDEO, in part to get full-time access to Kelly through an always-on video link, unquote. Hackett retired from Steelcase in 2014, and in 2016, Bill Ford hired him to run the automaker's nascent smart mobility subsidiary, which was tasked with rethinking from the ground up how cars would be driven, powered, and owned. Once again, Hackett turned to IDEO. The company had already been working with Ford as a client, but Hackett embedded its employees in Dearborn to jumpstart a transformation of Ford's culture. Hackett told the writer, and I quote, "This is what we call the design gap." And he pointed to the space between two lines on a graph he had sketched on a whiteboard. Quoting from that piece, "One line ascends. This is a company's skill at making things, which goes up over time. Below it is a descending line representing a company's understanding of the customer's experience. This Hackett said, can decline over time as a company loses sight of the problems it's in the business of solving. The design gap may be noticeable when the job is, say, a building of marginally better tailgate for the Ford F-150, but it becomes positively yawning when your industry is so thoroughly turned on its head that you're forced to ask some basic questions. Do people want to own their own cars or share them, drive them or have them driven? The flood of new technologies makes everything possible. The last question we ask is, how can purposeful design improve user experience? This is also perhaps the right time to declutter the inane add-ons that nobody likes, seats that monitor your heart rate, etc. As the piece informs, overloading the dashboard with too many doodads requires the driver to do hard thinking about what she needs while on the road, and at the same time, it burdens the company with producing all these options. Figuring out the right choices is the trick, and it is not simple. Hackett's arrival at Ford in a hitherto insular company is bound to break a few design and perception norms, and his presence has shifted narrative from how to devise new sets of features for drivers to how drivers feel when they drive, and what are their complaints, and what are their bugbears, do they need chargers, is the navigation system too complicated, what digital ecosphere are they comfortable with? These are the questions that speed up and clarify design processes and put the user, i.e. the driver, in charge of having to answer those questions. It's not just about the technology and the dazzling techniques you have employed in these cars, but what the user feels is useful. Quoting from that piece, in China, for example, Ford is putting customers into comically primitive prototypes, foam body, cardboard seats, and asking them to role-play driving scenarios, teasing out preferences they might not have thought to articulate. Captured on video, a driver's backwards glance at his mother-in-law revealed that her comfort was more important to him than his own. Thenceforth, the back seat took on greater significance in the design process. At Hackett's Ford, you don't move to the make phase until you have a deep understanding of how people use their cars, and even more importantly, why they use their cars. Hackett says it best in the piece, if you look at business history, the winners are almost always those that get their user experience right. He told the writer of The Atlantic piece that though a part of him wants to spend all his time in the design studio and rejoice in the potential of things, when he walks out of there, he has another kind of accountability, which is he has to, and the company has to, deliver results. He says, and I quote, "We have shareholders. That's a design problem unto itself. How do you weld the two together?" As the piece puts it beautifully, Hackett knows that he needs to become more like Steve Jobs, who returned to the company as CEO in 1997. Future-focused, yes, but aware that the future is built with cash generated in the now. How much time will Hackett get? We don't know that. But change is clear and present in the absence of mahogany furniture in the 11th floor conference room of the Ford headquarters. It is, which by the way now, is an open space full of engineers and data scientists, sleeves rolled up, sketching the future and Ford's position in arguably the greatest race in business. We leave you with the best line from the piece in The Atlantic. "It will take some time," said Hackett, but he'd rather get the right answers slowly than the wrong ones quickly.
The Deep Dive podcast series, Ford has a furniture guy heading its smart mobility team. Why?
Well, one of the world's pioneers of the automotive industry has just hired someone who is thinking right out of the box and putting all ideas out into the open. Will furniture design translate to a better user experience for drivers of cars all around the world? Only time will tell. And if you have something to tell, to write into us on mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.